Rogers Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win.
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske. Wow. Win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Monday, the 1st of May, 2017. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Here we go, another week of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 FM WSBT. Presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. My name is Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Wow, a lot has changed since I've been in studio. It's been a month. I have a clock to look at now. Over the top of your head. Look at this.
Yeah.
Things are changing.
Wouldn't it have been cool if we both could see the clock?
Well, we actually got you a mirror. Or you can just take a selfie.
Well, I use my cell phone to kind of look at it, the reflection of it.
Yeah. Well, you just keep bringing the good facts, and I'll just read the clock. How about that? We'll cut that deal. On the program this evening, we're going to take a look back at the National Football League draft since we were last on the air. Deshaun Kizer has a home. Isaac Rochelle was drafted. Some Notre Dame free agents have found homes. A local high school football player has signed on with the Kansas City Chiefs. And a basketball player at Ball State inked a football deal. That's kind of the popular thing. Get those guys to play basketball at the tight end position and do some damage. So we'll have some audio from Deshaun Kizer throughout the program. He has met the Cleveland media, and he is starting to settle in with his brand-new football team, the Cleveland Browns. I'll ask Eric about Kevin Austin. He's a high school wide receiver. Should we know that name? We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about current Notre Dame wide receiver C.J. Sanders, how he might fit in this fall. My five question of the day. I'm going to answer today's question, and I will ask myself, or Eric will ask me probably, the five things that have caught my attention over the first month of the South Bend Cubs season. We'll do that in about 42 minutes or so. More NFL draft, rapid fire baseball talk coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. If you have a question or comment, 574-282-2696. That's 574-282-2696. Before we get to Kizer, let me take care of a couple of news and notes, if you don't mind. You don't mind?
I don't mind.
First off, Brady Bjork, the younger brother of Anders Bjork, the outstanding Notre Dame hockey player, announced on Twitter today that he is going to play at the University of Notre Dame, just like his older brother. And the tweet says, quote, "Humbled that I will play hockey at the University of Notre Dame in the future. I cannot thank my family enough for this opportunity," end quote. So another Bjork on the way. He's 17 years old. I would assume he's probably going to go play in the USHL, for example, and then work his way to the University of Notre Dame. And his big brother, Anders, is going to represent the United States at the World Championships, as well as his teammate, goaltender Cal Peterson, and former Notre Dame hockey player, Anders Lee. Have you noticed the Notre Dame boys for the Penguins are doing quite well? Brian Rust and Ian Cole, they're up 2-0 over the Washington Capitals in an Eastern Conference semifinals. They got a chance to go back-to-back. Maybe we'll get the cup back at Notre Dame Stadium this year. And we have now the Jumbotron to show it.
There you go.
Everybody can see it. Still the coolest trophy.
Absolutely.
I have my picture with the Stanley Cup on my desk here at work, and it's my favorite picture of all time. You couldn't kiss it, you can't pick it up, but you could put your arm around it and give it a little hug.
Well, I'll tell you, the one group you'd have tough time, and I agree with you convincing that, is that all those folks that came over and got their pictures taken with the World Series trophy over at Four Winds Field that one night recently.
Well, there's sentimental value with that trophy, but the coolest trophy
absolutely
is the Stanley Cup because you get your name put on it. It's on the ring, and then when they run out of room, they take a ring off and they put a new one on, and they put the old ring in the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto.
And you can drink out of it.
Yeah, it's been found at the bottom of swimming pools. I won't tell the person, but a former Notre Dame hockey player was on a team that won the Stanley Cup, and he took it out on the town, and this, that, and probably a whole bunch more happened, and the cup fell off.
Wow.
But here's the funny thing. The person that takes the cup around to wherever it goes has tools to fix anything that can happen to the cup while it's out and about. So it was fixed in a matter of moments, but the top of the cup came off. I'm not sure if it was the Notre Dame player's responsibility or not, but that's just part of the story, I was told. So congratulations to Brady Bjork. He is going to play for the Irish hockey team in the future, just like his brother Anders. Now, the other news and notes I want to get to really, really fast, and we'll spend more time on this in the 6 o'clock hour, but the IHSAA came out with their sectional realignments today, and let me just note a couple of things. First off, we'll go with football. The big news is Mishawaka moves down from 5A to 4A. And they are now in an 8-team sectional in Class 4A. It is Hobart, Kankakee Valley, Mishawaka, New Prairie, Clay, Riley, St. Joe, Washington. So Mishawaka drops down to 4A. And you take a look at 5A. There's a new sectional with Adams, Munster, Michigan City, and LaPorte. In 6A, it's Penn, Valpo, Chesterton, and Warsaw. And in 3A, you've got Marion in a sectional, along with Jimtown, Knox, Glenn, Fairfield, Mequonakwa, if I said that right, Peru, and Tippecanoe Valley. So that's the football realignment. Again, more on this later. I think the interesting news also is boys basketball realignment. Penn rejoins a lot of the NIC teams. A brand new boys basketball sectional in 4A. It's sectional 3. There are 6 teams. It is LaPorte, Mishawaka, Penn, Adams, Clay, and Riley. Washington moves down to 3A. They join St. Joe, New Prairie, Marion, Jimtown, Glenn, and Culver Academies. And the final note, for girls basketball, St. Joe wins a state championship. They have now accumulated enough of those points. They get pushed up to 4A. And the 4A sectional locally will be LaPorte, Mishawaka, Penn, Adams, Clay, Riley, and St. Joe. So you have two powers, Penn and St. Joe, in the same 4A sectional. That's the price of success when you win state championships like St. Joe. They are now in 4A, so you have Penn and St. Joe in the same sectional. That should be very, very interesting. More on this later, but we wanted to give you a little sample of the news from the IHSAA today as sectional realignments are now public knowledge. To the NFL draft, DeShone Kizer goes to the Cleveland Browns. Round number 2, pick number 52 overall. So, Eric Hansen, we talked about a lot of teams where he would be a good fit, a place where he could be on a good team. Hopefully there would have been a veteran quarterback in front of him, allow him to learn and be a student this year, and then when it was time for him to hopefully take over the reins, he would be ready to go. With the Cleveland Browns, you really don't have that veteran presence, and you could argue the quarterback job is truly up for grabs. I'm not sure how locked in they are with Brock Osweiler. That was basically a salary dump to gain some picks with the Houston Texans. They have a couple of other guys, but it sure looks like, Eric, whether it's the right thing or not, DeShone Kizer will have an opportunity to compete this fall for the starting job with the Cleveland Browns. But again, the formula we liked to put Kizer in the best position, the Cleveland Browns do not fit that formula.
Right. Here's I'll start with what I don't like about him falling to Cleveland. One is this is a franchise that in no way resembles the proud franchise of the Browns that turned into the Baltimore Ravens, where Ozzie Newsome has been shepherding that as their GM for a long time, and that's just been really good business. This is an expansion franchise that's never gotten its footing. Since 1999, Darren, they've had 26 starting quarterbacks. Cody Kessler was the 26th. He was a third-round pick last year. He's one of the three quarterbacks that still are on the roster. So you look at their roster right now. Cody Kessler, 24 years old. Kevin Hogan, 24 years old. Brock Osweiler, 26. Who's the mentor voice in the quarterback room? Now, what I like about Cleveland's situation is that Hugh Jackson has a really good history with quarterbacks, and at least they have a head coach that has that kind of expertise, that's had a reputation for developing quarterbacks. I like their GM, Sashi Brown. I thought they did a really good job of playing their hand into three pretty good first-round picks. And the fact that they wanted Deshaun, that they didn't see that there was much of a difference between Deshaun and the three guys drafted in the top 12, because Cleveland could have taken one of those guys easily. They seem to really like Deshaun, but I was looking, through the past drafts back to 2005 of quarterbacks. You know, if you don't get it done pretty fast and you're not a top of the first round pick, teams move on pretty fast. And I've looked at a few of the 2018 mocks, and you already see Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Josh Allen picked by Cleveland in the next draft. So that's a possibility. So there's a lot of things kind of swirling there. But I think Cleveland helped themselves. I think they're a better franchise for who they drafted. I don't know that there's going to be an opportunity for Deshaun to develop in the timeline that we thought was going to be good. But it is what it is. He's excited, and we'll see how it plays out. This is, I feel better with Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown with Cleveland than I did with Cleveland a few years ago.
When Brady Quinn had to deal with that era, which unfortunately is kind of lingering with Cleveland right now. Well, barring a huge change, he just doesn't appear to be a quarterback that's ready from day one to be a starting quarterback. And Eric, so many times we have seen quarterbacks push forward and they weren't ready for the opportunity. They got out on the field. They became damaged goods, became mentally fragile, and never made it in the National Football League. That doesn't mean Deshaun Kizer has to fall in line with some of the other quarterbacks. But it concerns me that he might be pushed out on the field very quickly. I mean, Brock Osweiler is not a guy that's ready to win a Super Bowl at this time with a team that needs the quarterback to play very, very well. When he was in Denver helping out when Peyton Manning was injured, he fit the mold pretty well. It was still a football team that had a great defense, Eric, that they relied on to win a Super Bowl with. They had a pretty good running game, so Brock didn't have to win the game when he was the quarterback there. He's going to have to win the game if he's the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He's not as bad as I think it came across in Houston. It did not go well. There's no doubt about that, but I still think he's serviceable. I would be shocked if he's not the starting quarterback, barring just some huge change in direction by the Cleveland Browns. So I just really hope, even though there's no exact way to do things, I just feel like Deshaun has work to do with mechanics, with accuracy, and learning the NFL game. And the best thing for him is to not play at all next year, or at the very least, deep into the season, Eric. I really think he's got to take care of some Deshaun Kizer things in order to give him the best chance to succeed when and if that opportunity comes.
Right. The one thing that both Cleveland and Kizer liked, Cleveland worked him out, and Hugh Jackson personally was at that workout, and Hugh gave Kizer some adjustments, some tweaks, and Deshaun took to them very quickly. They were able to make some little fixes, and both Deshaun and the Cleveland brass seem to be very encouraged by that. They feel like, again, the things that that are negatives in his game are fixable, and both by coaching and by time. And that doesn't mean he was poorly coached in college. It's just the development of a quarterback. The thing is, how patient will ownership be with Deshaun Kizer moving along? It's funny, Darren, because pre-draft and during the draft, DeShone Kizer's falling and here's the problem and Tom Brady's body and all, or I got it mixed up, Tom Brady's mind. And then when he got picked, a lot of analysts loved the pick. They loved him in the middle of the second round. And so they seem to be very encouraged by this. Again, when you throw in the three first-round picks that Cleveland put together, two of them being on defense, mm-hmm. and then the third-round pick, Larry Ogunjobi from Charlotte, a guy with very little football experience but a kind of an exciting athlete. There's a high standard, though, in Cleveland now, with the Cavaliers having won a world championship, with Cleveland getting to the world championship. You know, people in Cleveland don't think of themselves as lovable losers anymore.
We don't live in Cleveland. We don't understand.
I was born there, though.
Okay, so you can partially answer the question. But there is a mentality right now in the Cleveland Browns organization, I would think, that has to be wiped away. It's mainly in the right. fan base. It is a losing attitude. And you got to start winning. They were in round to an 0-16 season before they finally got a victory. Eric, that mentality has to be wiped away. And sometimes it takes time to do that. Now, hopefully with DeShone Kizer coming in, let's say he takes off, maybe he can help erase some of those bad vibes within the fan base. And I'm sure they're humans. I'm sure within the locker room, there's doubt. How long is it going to take to turn this around? What do we need to do to get this done? Hopefully Hugh Jackson has a plan for this organization, because to me, I think more concerning than anything else, DeShone Kizer is walking into a loser's locker room. And at some point, that's got to turn around. You're in a tough division. You've got teams that make the playoffs perennially. You got the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got the Baltimore Ravens. Cincinnati Bengals did not make it last year. And even though when they get there, they can't win a playoff game. At the same time, they have been a team that has made the playoffs a lot recently. Yeah. So there's a lot of things going against the Cleveland Browns, and it's just going to take Hugh Jackson. He's got to have that master plan and erase the doubt in the minds of the players. Try to bring a fresh attitude, but it's got to be tough when you have to build upon a 1-15 season.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see what is the scenario that puts DeShone in the starter seat in 2018. Cleveland got rid of RG3 and Josh McCown after the season. Those are the two other quarterbacks that started last year in addition to Cody Kessler. They kind of rode Cody Kessler at the end. Okay, let's say Osweiler's your starter. That's a guy that's a former second-round pick. Now, do you want him to play well enough that you win some games, but bad enough that Kizer is still the guy? Yeah. Or do you start Cody Kessler? Kevin Hogan is the guy that's probably in the precarious spot on the roster. Out of Stanford, he was a fifth-round pick by Kansas City. Cleveland picked him up at the very beginning of last season as a practice squad guy, and then he got activated. And there were a lot of guys that threw passes for him last year that didn't start. Terrell Pryor threw passes for Cleveland last year, so
I don't think they have anybody any better than Will Fuller.
Yeah, but the best thing DeShone could do is just really dedicate himself to his craft and getting better. And again, the one thing that really encouraged me was what sold Cleveland on DeShone was what we thought, you know, the interview and the personal workout and the fact that Hugh Jackson was able to see tangible results within one workout when he said, hey, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? So, it's going to be interesting, but I have a lot of friends that are Cleveland Browns fans, having been born in Cleveland and grown up in Ohio, and they are star for winner. And again, the bar is high. I don't think that, you know, people are going to accept that Cleveland is just going to stumble and bumble around as they have for the better part of their existence as an expansion franchise in the late 90s. You know, they've made the playoffs once since they've been an expansion franchise. And the last time they won a playoff game was when they were the old Cleveland Browns that turned into the Baltimore Ravens. And that was before Kizer was even born.
See, I feel guilty as a Broncos fan. The fumble, the drive, all those things that happened in the late 80s, that was actually a pretty good era of Cleveland Brown football with the most conservative head coach in NFL history, Marty Schottenheimer, at the helm. You had Bernie Kosar at the time, Ernest Biner, Kevin Mack, Brian Brennan had a good defense, but boy, that just went away so quickly. They just never got to that Super Bowl, made it to the AFC title game 3 times in 4 years.
And even before that, you had Brian Sipe, you had Phipps to Pitts combination.
Rutigliano, the head coach.
Yeah, Rutigliano. They even had a song, the Sam Rutigliano Super Bowl team. That was hard to sing.
They did?
Yeah, yes, it was. It was 12 Days of Christmas and somehow with Sam Rutigliano, I remember that.
Well, go right ahead if you'd like to try.
No, I don't think I'm going to go there.
It's probably on YouTube
somewhere.
Only if
Judy Garland does it with me.
Oh, you brought that up from years ago when I had to sing with Judy Garland. Thank you so much.
That was pretty cool.
Didn't I make a prediction wrong about the Cardinals?
Yeah, you did.
And I had to sing Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland?
Yes.
I don't think we have that audio anymore.
Oh, that
I think it's long gone. All right, couple of sound bites from DeShone Kizer. First, how will his Notre Dame experience help him with the Cleveland Browns? Here's the former Irish quarterback.
I think he's probably my biggest asset as being the quarterback of Notre Dame as far as the stage at the college level gets. I don't know if there's one bigger. Representing something a lot bigger than yourself is one concept, but when you're doing it at an international level with a fan base that truly, expands all over the world, it was an honor and a privilege. And I now will be able to pull from those experiences to see if I can, take that and apply it to the professional level here in Cleveland.
I do agree with him on that. I think Notre Dame is a really good training ground to get ready for the National Football League from a media standpoint, dealing with scrutiny, the fans. He made the point during his press conference over the weekend with the Cleveland media, hey, when 50% love you and 50% of the fans hate you, you kind of figure out how to deal with those particular circumstances. But it's a fishbowl here in South Bend, all the media that covers this team. I do think the experience here will be good for him going to Cleveland.
I do, too. I think the fact that he's from Toledo, that he knows the culture.
You think that's good?
I do.
Because that's in the back of my mind. Sometimes being close to home can be something that's heavy on your shoulders.
Well, I mean, I think might have been a little bit for Brady coming from Columbus to Cleveland. But I think he's excited about it. And I think, a lot of the fans are excited. And again, they know how bad Cleveland's been, so I don't think they're unrealistic. But, Toledo's maybe 2 hours away from Cleveland at the most. I think it's going to work out good. He's certainly used to the climate. The kid played high school ball in Toledo, college ball in South Bend, and now pro ball in Cleveland.
That's one of my points. He's going to a place where his skill set will show up. He's strong. He's physical. He has the ability to run the football, and when you think about playing in the AFC North, when you've got a December game in Pittsburgh or Cincinnati or Baltimore or home game in Cleveland, Eric, he is the type of quarterback that will be able to, I think, withstand some of those tough conditions. He's a guy that's tough to bring down. I think he's in a really good environment and climate division. I think some of his skills will really show up in those particular situations. Final soundbite from DeShone Kizer over the weekend. What we were just talking about, his thoughts on the possibility of playing early.
Absolutely. As soon as they made that call, the first thought that you can have is having that jersey on and that orange helmet and being able to compete and trying to become an asset as quickly as I possibly can to this team. But at the same time, like you said, there's a lot of work. So those thoughts of having that orange helmet quickly turn over to how fast can I get into that playbook and learn as much as I possibly can.
DeShone Kizer talking to the Cleveland media over the weekend. I know you're not into uniforms. You don't talk about uniforms when you get asked on your chat about Notre Dame uniforms.
Yeah.
You never talk about it, but since you're from Cleveland, they need to do something with their jerseys.
Okay.
Those brown jerseys with the orange. Ugh. Give me something else.
Okay. I don't know.
See, you just don't ever take the bait on that, do you?
Yeah, I don't.
Totally understand. Just a point. The brown uniforms just don't work for me. Even though they're called the Browns, that's not why they're called the Browns. It's more about Paul Brown than the color.
Although it was funny because when you're writing these stories at the Cleveland Browns, then you had Sashi Brown, who's the GM, no relation to Paul Brown. Jim Brown was the guy that read the draft choice of DeShone Kizer.
How cool was that?
That was really cool. I'm sure that he wished he had been in Philadelphia for that. He had left by that point. So there were a lot of Browns that have no relationship to Paul Brown, who actually went to the Bengals and started them.
You know who probably is DeShone Kizer's best target in Cleveland? Might be LeBron James. Serious.
Okay.
Could you see him at tight end?
I think that would be pretty interesting.
Although, in his world, he would take every other game off, of course. He couldn't play every week. I mean, how could you do that? I mean, you can only play a couple of games a row in the NBA, and you're awfully tired. I feel so sorry for them. All right, 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We're going to talk baseball next hour, but can I mention this to you really fast?
Sure.
The world knows that we're Cardinal fans in Cub country. The Cubs right now are 13-11, a little different than when they went, 60-2 in April last year, it seemed like. I mean, they were winning the division. It was over by the time we got to May 1st. Now, I believe in looking at the standings on June 1st. When you look at it at June 1st, it's 2 months of data. I think it's enough to tell the whole story. So I don't think we're at the point where we have a big enough sample size to read anything into anything. But I just want to generally ask you, on May 1st, the Cubs are 13-11. St. Louis is 12-12. They were 3-9. They were kind of buried a couple of weeks ago. And even though they yakked up a game yesterday to Cincinnati, they're only a game out. And considering how bad they have played, it kind of feels like they're very lucky to be where they are right now. Now, I don't think it's going to be that close going into August and September. I still think the Cubs are 8 to 10 games better than St. Louis, but we'll see if that pans out in that fashion. But after the 3-9 start, and with the way the Cubs have started, do you have more hope than you did before opening day to stay in the race?
I do, based on some pretty good starting pitching from guys like Mike Leake and Lance Lynn, which I wasn't sure about. And then also some of the bullpen arms. Trevor Rosenthal until yesterday was really good. And I think there's some help at AAA for their bullpen. You know, I think the best thing that's happened to them is Johnny Peralta going on the disabled list so that Mike Matheny wouldn't pencil him into the starting lineup at third and put him as the cleanup hitter, because the guy that's in cleanup, Jed Jerko, is playing pretty good ball. And Colton Wong is starting to play good baseball.
Why is that?
Because he's getting to play every day, because Johnny Peralta's not on the bench. And you don't have to then platoon Jerko and Wong at second base.
I had this figured out 2 years ago. I'm glad Mike has finally figured this out now.
But I would like to see them make a trade later in the summer, if they're still in it, for a core-type player, for an impact core player. I'm not sure where that player exactly fits on the diamond, but they need another kind of middle of the order guy, bat, that can also play some defense.
They're hanging around. All right, very good. It is now 27 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit about some of the Notre Dame players who signed free agent contracts, plus Garrick Dieter from South Bend has a new home. I want to ask Eric about Kevin Austin, a high school wide receiver. Is he considering Notre Dame seriously? We'll get to those storylines coming up. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. It is 24 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. My name is Darren Pritchett. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio presented by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air. It is 24 minutes in front of the top of the hour here on WSBT Radio. We spent some time talking about DeShone Kizer finding a new home in the National Football League, going to the Cleveland Browns, round number 2, pick number 52 overall. Some of the other storylines from this weekend. The only other Notre Dame player drafted was defensive end Isaac Rochelle. He had to wait around until round number 7, and he was selected by the Los Angeles Chargers, and it sounded like he was ready to leave his draft party when he got the phone call and got drafted by the Los Angeles Chargers. So what type of fit is this?
I think it's a really good fit. You know, San Diego has liked the Notre Dame players. They drafted Manti Te'o a few years ago. Chris Watt was on their team for a while. They had Trevor Robinson. They also grabbed James Onuwalu as a priority free agent, undrafted free agent. I think he's going to fit in well there. And just listening to their GM and their head coach, it sounds like they want to play Rochelle both inside and outside, which is what he did at Notre Dame. So that it makes a lot of sense. They would use him outside on running downs, move him inside on passing downs, give him a little bit of inside pass rush. They really like his versatility. But I can understand, you know, that these I remember Ian Williams crawled out the window at his draft party because he was so embarrassed he didn't get drafted. You start to see kickers and long snappers and guys with long police blotters, and it gets very frustrating with young men that are kind of on that cusp of being drafted in the seventh round or not. So I can understand his frustration.
Now we move to Jerron Jones, the former Irish defensive lineman. I'm not sure exactly why he wasn't drafted. You know me, I've always felt like ever since he did not play in a couple of games this year against the academy teams, I just kind of changed my tune a little bit on him, unfortunately. I still think he's a good football player, but I just was uneasy. And I don't know if tapping out is the right word. It could have been some coaching involved as well, but he didn't play. But yet you saw him against Miami, Eric, and he was spectacular. And if he had 11 games like that of film to show the National Football League, he'd have been taken probably on the second day. But there was only that one game where you saw Jerron really have the type of game that you were hoping for. It was against the Hurricanes. He got the game ball. I interviewed him after the game. He was so excited. First time he'd ever gotten a game ball. And seconds after our interview concluded, he handed it to his mom, and it was just an extra special moment. But in terms of football-wise, there just wasn't enough of those moments to get him drafted. But the good news is he found a home, at least for now, with the New York Giants.
In an organization where two of his former teammates made the team as undrafted free agents last year, both at his position group, Romeo Okwara, who ended up being a starter for part of the season with the Giants, and then Ishaq Williams, who was on their practice squad and got activated late in the year. So I think that's encouraging for Jerron that he's going to an organization where some of his teammates have had success. Here's why I don't think Jerron got drafted. There are just too many questions, and you could get him as an undrafted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, goes to the combine, really poor performance. Goes to his pro day, almost equally poor performance. Now, are you injured, Jerron? Are you healthy? You know, when I saw him, he didn't look like he had been training for the pro day. Now, they were only 3 weeks apart. Usually there's a little bit larger gap. But, you know, I would have scratched my head if I were teams and say, you know what? I still would like this guy on my roster, but I'm not going to invest a draft pick on him because he doesn't look like he's invested in himself. So, you know, if there were some lingering injury issues, that could be an explanation, but you talked to Jerron and there wasn't. I mean, from a personality standpoint, he's the kind of guy you'd love to live next door to. He'd be fun. You know, he probably have a nice lawnmower you could borrow if yours broke. You know, so, but you know, it's a business, and
yes,
he didn't take care of his business. I think had Matt Bayless been the strength and conditioning coach last year, we would have seen a different draft day for Jerron. And I think that's one of the reasons you will see Mike McGlinchey's stock go up next year. And we've already started to see it in some of these early mocks. I think he's pretty much a consensus top 10 pick. I've only seen him out of the 10 on one of the mocks that I've seen to this point. And so, you know, that strength and conditioning could have really made a difference for Jerron.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Cole Luke, Irish cornerback, signs a free agent deal with the Carolina Panthers. You look at Carolina, they went to Super Bowl 50, lost to Denver. Following the loss to the Broncos, they lost cornerback Josh Norman. They actually cut him, and then he was signed by the Washington Redskins. He was their best cornerback. And you look at Carolina this season, it was an absolute disaster coming off the Super Bowl appearance. Their cornerback position was a mess. I am not sitting here saying Cole Luke is the answer for one of the starting cornerback positions with Carolina. I think he has a lot to prove with Carolina, but I think it's a place where there is an opportunity to latch on in the secondary.
Yeah, I would say too, but he did not run particularly well at his pro day. But Cole Luke is a guy that in his younger years was a very, very good corner, didn't have a good senior year. So he dropped you know, into this category, and we'll see if he's able to hook on with Carolina. But it's always a better situation when you're a priority free agent where they really want you in their camp versus guys that have to, you know, kind of struggle that they're really just numbers, which is what's going to happen to Tari and Folston whenever he gets picked by a team.
Okay, we really can't offer much analysis on the next one. Long snapper Scott Daly gets a mini camp tryout with the Chicago Bears.
Well,
he did not miss a snap ever, did he, at Notre Dame?
He didn't. And, you know, that seems like a good landing spot for a Chicago kid.
Are you saying they need someone to send the ball back to the punter a lot? I'm kidding. Sorry,
well, you know what's
kinda, I'm kidding.
You know what's kind of interesting is Darius Fleming is trying to make a comeback into the NFL.
Good
and his
him.
Reentry point is as a long snapper. He's been working with the longtime Chicago Bears long snapper who's retired. Is it Mosley? I'm blanking on his name, and I'll look it up here in a second. But he is training, and he actually was a really good long snapper in high school. Charlie Weiss considered him as their long snapper, but they needed him as a defensive player very early in Charlie's time, so they kind of pulled him out of that and looked at other folks. But it'd be really interesting because you would have a guy that could give you, you know, long snapper that could do other things on special teams too, mm-hmm. tackle and so forth. So I'm wondering if he'll end up getting in that competition with Scott Daly and the Bears. But congratulations to Scott Daly on that.
Well deserved, and hopefully Mitch Trubisky will lead the Bears to a lot of touchdowns, and it'll be extra point snaps.
Okay.
That's the hope there in the Windy City. Isn't Cameron Lewis more with the Bears now? We talked to him on Pro Day, and
yes,
I thought he said he had inked a deal with Chicago.
Yep. He's there.
One of our favorite people. That's a Pro Day tradition now.
Yes.
We come over, we get a hug from Cameron Lewis Moore. One of the more enjoyable people you could be around.
Absolutely.
Hope for the best for him. Now to a couple of local players. And wide receiver Garrick Dieter, who of course played here in South Bend, started his football career in college at SMU, went to Bowling Green, and then the graduate transfer opportunity at Alabama, got to play in the national championship game, second shy of winning a national championship. Eric, he signed on with the Kansas City Chiefs. How good of a fit is that?
I think it's good. They drafted a receiver in the middle rounds. Andy Reid, you know, I think is a really good coach. Kansas City, I think, is a very good organization right now. So this is a good landing spot for Garrick. I think once he gets in camp and shows them everything he can do beyond being a receiver, he's going to be on the roster when they say, wow, he can return, he can tackle, he can do so many things on our special teams, and he can catch the ball. I think that he's going to do very well. And you know he's going to work hard. He's always had that very good work ethic. So I think this is a good scenario for Garrick.
It is very difficult to find a wide receiver out on the perimeter that is willing to block. And Garrick Dieter has that ability. And I don't want that to sound like a knock because he can catch the football. He can do the other things. But to me, he's got a little Eddie McCaffrey in him. Eddie McCaffrey did a little bit of everything. He wasn't the fastest guy, didn't have the best hands, but he did everything very, very well, and he could block. And Dieter has that same type of ability.
If you're a priority free agent, they've got their eye on you. And last year, 28% of opening day rosters were undrafted players. Not undrafted rookies, but undrafted players. So that's, you know, more than 25%. That's more than a quarter. So I think, you know, the odds are good. You work hard, you're going to either make the practice squad or you're going to make the active squad. And I think that, again, Garrick is in a pretty good situation with Kansas City.
Good for him. And finally, this is an interesting story. Concord High School graduate Franco House, a Ball State basketball player, has signed an undrafted free agent contract with the Chicago Bears. Eric, he hasn't played football since high school.
Yeah, that's... And he's a good basketball player. He was a second-team All-MAC selection, averaged more than 13 points, and, you know, had good rebound and assist totals. We've seen a few of these guys, and I think, you know, even there was some thought that Austin Torres might play football for Notre Dame his fifth year of eligibility. He ended up coming back to the basketball team. But this seems to be a trend, and there's been a few guys that have been able to make it, so... I think it's a fun story. It'll be interesting to see how he does. I think probably Bears fans are more intrigued by Franco House, some of them, than a Division II Ashland tight end, but we'll see how that plays out.
By the way, how about Trubisky? Got kind of booed on the video board at the United Center. Man, that's a tough crowd.
That is a tough crowd. You know, they had to give up a lot to get him to move
question.
Up one spot.
It's a horrible business decision, but if he ends up being a good quarterback, it'll be worth the picks. But you're losing the opportunity to draft multiple starters to other parts of the football team. But because you made the deal to move up one spot and gave up all those extra picks and a lot of good collateral, now you've missed out on opportunities to grab other players. But hey, we know if you don't have a quarterback in the National Football League, you might as well just say forget it.
Yeah.
So hopefully they found one, and that's all that's important in the eyes of Pace and the organization.
I hope he makes it. To me, it just seems like a dice roll. Again, that group that's coming next year with those three Pac-12 quarterbacks, the kid from Wyoming, Lamar Jackson, boy, that class seems a lot more loaded. It seems like if you could wait a year, I'll give Cleveland credit because they could have done kind of the same thing. They could have either taken him with one, or they could have traded up and tried to get him with another pick and then lost a lot of draft picks. But they need to build a team around their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I think Chicago does too. I mean, I don't think they're close. So I don't know. I know that a lot of Bears fans felt like they needed a quarterback, but I'm not sure that he's my guy. I wouldn't have taken the other guys at number two, but I would have felt more safe with Deshaun Watson as my quarterback.
I guarantee you any Bears fan that is concerned about this is saying this. We moved up one spot and gave up all that collateral for a guy who has started 13 games in college football. And that's tough to swallow. And I totally understand that.
Yeah, I mean, is he the consent? I don't know. I mean, Darren, what you've seen of Sam Darnold, I know that you've seen him play. I don't know if you've seen Josh Allen or Josh Rosen. But Sam Darnold, would you take Mitch Trubisky or would you take Sam Darnold?
Darnold in a second.
Right.
Rosen in a second.
Right.
I don't think it's even close. We're not evaluators. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But Darnold looks spectacular. And again, during the draft evaluation process, what did we hear? Scouts, personnel, they would watch USC film, and who would stand out more than anybody else? Darnold, the quarterback. And they weren't even watching for him, but he stood out, and the Irish have to deal with him at Notre Dame Stadium coming up this fall. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Here's what's coming up in our next segment. I'll take care of the My 5 question of the day. Then I'll ask Eric about high school wide receiver Kevin Austin. How interested is he in the Fighting Irish? How good of a get would he be? Answers coming up as Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats, My 5 Question of the Day, on 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The My 5 Question of the Day today is the five things that have caught Darren's attention over the first month of the South Bend Cubs season.
You know, I love when you do this.
Do you?
I just giggle all the time.
All right. We should play the soap theme when I do it. Number five.
Well, number five is the success offensively of Johnny Parada.
Not Johnny Peralta.
So far, I've not said that, and I'm surprised. I've had to be careful a couple of times. But we have, for example, Tom Uziak on, who covers the minor league system, and he goes through all the players. We have him on during the offseason every Wednesday. So we learned about a lot of players. And this guy never came up. Haven't found a whole lot about him. All he does is hit. He's a catcher. He's a first baseman. Line drive contact. Haven't seen a lot of power out of him, but hitting well over 300. Hitting around, I think, a 350 on base percentage right now. Didn't know much about him. Now I know about him. A very good contributor for South Bend in April.
Okay, we'll go to number four.
Number four, Chris Peters continues to transform from a pitcher to a position player. He's out of Caraco, entered the Cubs organization as a pitcher and did not have any success in the summer leagues. So they turned him into a position player in 2015. Didn't hit for a lot of average at Eugene last year, but he has raw power. He's a left-handed batter, and each game that has gone on this year, He just seems to get more comfortable at the plate. He's seeing the ball better. He's now hit a couple of home runs, including one in Fort Wayne the opposite way over the weekend. Intriguing player considering he was a pitcher a couple of years ago.
Very good. He's Rick Ankiel, kind of. I almost gave away number three.
Cavante Mitchell.
I was just trying to give you a clue who you should say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll take your advice. Cavante Mitchell, outfielder. He's from the state of Missouri. Cubs drafted him out of high school. And he has raw power. Let me tell you about his last two home runs on the road trip. In Lansing, Eric, he hit a home run to left center field 501 feet. And there's an apartment building in left center, through center and right center. It cleared the building. I lost track of it. I just assumed it went up against the foundation. I missed it. Well, I lost it because it went over the roof, and I didn't expect that. Then, in Fort Wayne over the weekend, actually it was yesterday, I lose track of days, he hit one off the building beyond the left field fence, only the fifth time a player has hit that building on the fly since the stadium opened in 2009. It was probably 435 feet. So this kid's coming. He's becoming more consistent and just has the ability for that ball to come flying off his bat.
If he had hit it a little bit less, could he have, like, pitched it through somebody's window in the apartment?
Plexiglass.
No? Oh, plexiglass. Okay.
Wouldn't have broken it.
All right, number two.
Number two, Dakota Mekas is a relief pitcher out of Michigan State. Eric, he started the year by throwing 12 and a third hitless innings. So he threw a no-hitter, basically, out of the bullpen to start the year. Finally gave up a hit and a run on the road trip. But he is a big, powerful, right-handed pitcher, good slider, has been dominant coming out of the South Bend bullpen. So anytime you go 12 and a third innings to start the year without giving up a hit, you need to be recognized. Dakota Mekas has been recognized.
Well, counting down the five things that have caught Darren's attention over the first month of the South Bend Cub season, not counting the concession stands. Number five, Johnny Pareda's offensive success. Number four, Chris Peters' continuance to transform from a pitcher to a position player. The one that I gave away, Cavante Mitchell's power. I was too excited.
You're a big fan.
Two, Dakota Mekas dominates out of the Cubs bullpen. And the number one thing that has caught Darren's attention has been?
Honorable mention is the fact they ate broccoli four straight days on the road.
Oh, wow.
How about that? Lansing and Fort Wayne both had broccoli on their trays, and I ate it. Try to eat healthy. So I think that's noteworthy for honorable mention. But number one is Dylan Cease is the top pitching prospect in the Cubs system. His fastball as a starter sits anywhere from 94 to 98. But his curveball is so much better than what I understood. Reading about Cease coming into the season, his curveball, I think people analyzed it as pretty good. I think it's outstanding. It's got 12-6 break. It is sharp. And when you throw 94 to 98, and when you can rip off a curveball, some of the best hitting prospects in the Midwest League have been fooled by that pitch. They have struggled with the pitch. The changeup is still coming, but Eric, the curveball of Dylan Cease is number one on my list of things that have caught my attention so far this year.
And do we know what round the kid was picked in and how old he is?
He was picked in the sixth round in 2014, would have been picked higher had Tommy John surgery his senior year in high school. So that dropped him down, and I believe he received the fourth biggest bonus of a six-rounder in Major League Baseball history.
He's earning it.
He's a lottery ticket, as the Cubs have referred to him. Anytime you have a Tommy John kid, it could turn out to be something unbelievable. May not be anything. I think it's going to be a positive. That's the My Five. We've only got about a minute here. Why don't you go ahead and just offer a couple of thoughts on Kevin Austin, high school wide receiver.
6'3", 190. He's from South Florida. He's down to Tennessee, Miami, Duke, Notre Dame. I really think it's a Notre Dame-Miami battle. I believe Notre Dame's going to win this. And then he'll be the third wide receiver in this class, joining Micah Jones and Brandon Lindsey. Probably will take one more wide receiver beyond Kevin Austin.
We can probably talk about him a little more in depth tomorrow, but I just want to make sure we got that in. All right, let me play the music. South Bend Tribune tomorrow. Eric, what should we expect?
We should expect a high school softball game, weather permitting, between Marion and St. Joe. I don't know if it's going to get played. It's kind of cold and icky and pretending to rain. And we'll have much, much more.
All in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune more sports section. There'll be a lot more than normal.
There will. There will.
Eric, always a pleasure. I will talk to you at Four Winds Field tomorrow.
Sounds great.
Sean Steyers will join me in just a couple of moments. Back to the NFL draft. We have baseball conversation and rapid fire all coming up on Budweiser's weekday sports beat from Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT South Bend.
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish, 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it! Touchdown, Notre Dame!
Jackson with a spectacular spin move, and now the no-look pass to Zach August with a two-handed slam!
Adios! Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kizer looks, timing pattern.
Caught, touchdown, Notre Dame.
Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two of Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. 7 minutes after the top of the hour, he's Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for sticking around for this hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio. Straight ahead, more NFL draft conversation. You'll hear more from former Irish quarterback DeShone Kizer and what he told the Cleveland media after being drafted by the Browns on Friday. We have another rapid-fire segment coming up. We'll talk some baseball on the way with 1 month in the books. Some general thoughts on the NL Central and the AL Central as both Chicago teams near the top right now, although I think the records of both teams are a tad bit surprising. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. Also, we'll spend a little bit more time on the IHSA sectional realignment that was announced today. We've got the football, the boys' basketball, and the girls' basketball sectionals now in our hands, and I think there's some interesting news to talk about, including Mishawaka football dropping down to 4A. And they're one of about 2,600 teams in Sectional 18, it looks like.
Yeah.
The 6A and the 5A, very small sectionals. And then you have 2,000 teams in the 4A sectionals. But it all has to do with enrollment, trying to balance everything out. I do get that. But the 4A bracket has a lot of teams. So we'll get to that coming up. Plus, Penn basketball rejoined some of the NIC teams in a sectional. So that, I think, is good for the area.
Yeah, definitely.
Opinion.
Definitely.
So we'll get to that coming up in just a couple of moments. But back to DeShone Kizer, goes to the Cleveland Browns, number 52 overall. He is property of the Brownies, and he is right now in the mix to be a quarterback on the field for the Browns in 2017. Whether that's the best for him or not, I guess we're going to find out very, very soon. But how about just a quick thought? After all the conversations we had about Kizer and going through all the drama, all the stories that came out about DeShone Kizer, do you think he ended up in the ballpark area where you thought? Now, I'll admit, I thought he was going to go in the first 10, 12 picks of the second round, so
right.
I missed that.
And that's kind of what we talked about that on Friday prior to the start of the second round that night. And I think we were both thinking that you had a kind of a handful of teams there. There was the late word about the Packers could be in the mix at the start of the second round. But then you had teams, especially like San Diego and the Arizona Cardinals, both with aging quarterbacks, and you could probably even throw the Saints in there. They all had quarterbacks in their late 30s who, especially for DeShone Kizer, but for them as well, getting a younger quarterback, a guy who could sort of be an understudy for a year or so and then maybe take the reins in a year, two, maybe 2 years down the line, that it could work out for everybody. But all those teams go in different directions, and then you've got Kizer, picks start going by, and he ends up with the Browns. And I guess the worst part about it, about Cleveland, even if you take the name Cleveland Browns out of the situation, just the fact that where they are, you know, they've got the miserable track record with quarterbacks and everything, and just where they are with no sort of mentor like a Drew Brees or a Carson Palmer or whoever, Philip Rivers, whoever it happens to be. You have no older quarterback to sort of show a guy like Kizer the ropes, because the thing about Kizer compared to these other three, the guys who did go in the first round, the thing about him was what everyone was saying, he is the least pro ready. Right now, he needs the most time, but now you're in a situation like Cleveland, where these guys just get thrown to the wolves, and that's not where you want to be if you're DeShone Kizer or the Cleveland Browns, to kind of have to be thrown right out there on the field right away.
Brian Kelly mentioned he felt like Kizer has the most upside,
yeah,
the highest ceiling of all the quarterbacks in this draft. If you push him on the field too quickly, it's questionable whether he could reach those heights.
Right.
Now, granted, he could sit for 2 years and go out and not work out, and then we're having a different conversation, but just getting pushed out on the field this year is very, very concerning to me, considering the talent around him and the things that he needs to clean up in his game. So here's Kizer. I thought he was asked some interesting things by the Cleveland media. So let's play back a few of these cuts. This goes back to last year. Now, the Notre Dame media a couple of times asked Kizer about the NFL. It was during the season, and DeShone gave the correct answer. I'm focused on making this team better, blah, blah, blah. I'm not worried about the NFL. Now, in the back of his mind, I'm sure it's crossing through his mindset as the season is going on. So the Cleveland media asked Kizer if the NFL was a distraction for him last year during that 4-8 season. Here's the former Irish quarterback, DeShone Kizer.
I don't think it was a distraction. I knew that there was going to be an opportunity for me to play at the next level. But at the same time, we were going through so much as a team that the only thing I could focus on was trying to go 1-0 that week. So I wouldn't say it was a distraction at the time, but definitely in the back of my mind, I knew there would be an opportunity.
I don't think it was a distraction. I never got that feeling. If anything was a distraction, sharing snaps in fall camp and getting benched, that is a distraction.
that was my first thought when asking if that was a distraction. That, I mean, the whole Zaire situation was a bigger distraction, I think, than NFL was at any point. I just think that came in more into play than anything. I don't think the thought of the NFL was a distraction, and distraction would be the wrong word, but hindrance was, when you look at the way the season went, that became a bigger burden, I think, than anything. He still had times where he played really well, but just the whole thing, I don't think the question of the NFL was a distraction at all.
He had inexperienced wide receivers. Through September, the Notre Dame defense was on pace to have the worst statistical season in program history. So there was a lot of things that could have affected DeShone Kizer.
Right.
I'm not going to buy that the NFL was one of those distractions. So what did he learn during the 4-8 season last year with Fighting Irish? Here's DeShone Kizer from this weekend.
The biggest thing I've learned is how much goes into winning. You know, a lot of people think that it's all talent and it's all, you know, situation-based. But, you know, there's a lot that has to do with culture and environment. And, you know, as a natural leader and in a position of leadership, I know how much goes into, you know, trying to make sure the guys around you are put into the best positions they can possibly be to be successful. And quite frankly, I really haven't set, you know, certain things that I'm going to be able to pull from that. I think that those things are going to come as I continue to grow here, being able to reevaluate a new locker room and being around, you know, new teammates and seeing where the energy is here and where the environment is here, and then taking from the things that Coach Jackson is preaching here and see how the culture is going here to see what it's going to take for me to apply myself to their situation and see what I can do to get back to winning.
He had to deal with scrutiny.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to have to deal with that early on in Cleveland when you get on the football field. And let's think it a whole lot better, a whole lot quicker than we anticipate. But honestly, I think the NFL culture will take care of some of the things that DeShone Kizer needs to learn. And here's what I mean. Let's go back to the article where DeShone Kizer admitted he would be the first one to leave practice more times than not. He would then go take care of whatever he needed to take care of outside of football. And then later on that evening, when no one else was around, he'd go into the film room and do his film study. Well, all those other things you have to do, like school or whatever else, is now not a factor with the Cleveland Browns. You are a football player 24/7, 365 days a year. And now with some of these things that I don't want to call distraction. Education is not a distraction. I think I want to make sure I'm clear. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But things away from football now have to be pushed aside.
You can't give your full attention to football when you're also trying to be a student at Notre Dame or any school that Stanford, any school that takes academics seriously.
Deshaun said, hey, it probably wasn't a good look for the younger players seeing one of the older guys and the starting quarterback of the football team being the first one out the door. And I would agree with that.
Right.
If I'm a younger player, it would definitely catch my attention. It's not fair, but when you're one of the best players, you're under the spotlight. The team is going to look up to you. And not everybody can be a leader. I mean, not everybody can be a leader. And Jimmy Clausen's a prime example, was a very, very good college quarterback. But leading was not one of his better traits.
Right.
And I think Charlie Weiss tried to make him into a leader. And I'm a believer that you cannot teach someone to be a leader. It's got to be in your heart. It's got to be in your gut. I don't think you can inject that into anyone to get that leadership role. So I really believe the NFL culture might eliminate some of the things that possibly could have held Deshaun Kizer back, whether it be a person in the locker room someone looked up to or just a football player in general.
Yeah, and the thing, when he talks about a lot more goes into winning, culture and environment go into that, and I understand what you're kind of saying because now he's in an NFL culture, but the culture of the Cleveland Browns, unfortunately, has a long, we're going on two decades in the new existence of the Cleveland Browns, a long track record of not being very good. Now, at some point, you wouldn't expect that this is going to last forever. Even the Los Angeles Clippers finally changed their culture and environment. It at least got things going on a winning track, and we're still really early in this new sort of incarnation of what the Cleveland Browns could be. So will that change? Could he be the guy to sort of be a part of making that change? Again, really early. They did some really good things in this draft, but now can they take it to that next level? I mean, he's in a tough situation now just because of all this history, all this recent history of the new Cleveland Browns and what they've been for so long now.
Lions fans suffered through an 0-16 season.
Yeah.
And they got out of that hole and now are a competitive football team at this particular point. Still, they've not won that Super Bowl or been to the Super Bowl, but they are night and day from where they were. Number two, the Browns got smart. They brought in a baseball guy to help with running the organization. Everybody needs a baseball guy in their organization.
That's
all
it takes.
Fixes everything.
That's all it takes, right? You know, it's interesting because I was looking, and there's an article posted earlier today at CBSSports.com by Jason Lockenfora, one of their NFL writers. And he says he spoke to several executives from several teams that drafted a quarterback in the process. And you were just talking about the leadership. Not everyone can be a leader in that whole thing. But they say that one of the big knocks that when you compare Kizer to these other quarterbacks is not enough of his teammates had enough good things to say about him along the lines of being a leader. Not that he was a bad guy or any of that kind of stuff, but they didn't have enough good things to say about his leadership qualities compared to guys like Mitch Trubisky and Deshaun Watson specifically.
I think it was during Gruden's quarterback camp where he stressed to Kizer about a strong voice.
Right.
You got to have that strong voice so everybody listens to you, believes in you. Don't just say it, bark it.
Right.
Little things. John Gruden, those quarterback camps are fantastic.
Oh,
the Kizer one was very enjoyable.
I was watching some of the, I think it was kind of the best of a little bit of it yesterday where they had a lot of the different, saw him talking to a lot of the different guys. And just, there wasn't a whole lot of Kizer in there, I think because of the way sort of things turned out, or the way things were being projected when that best of was put together.
Sean Steyer's Darren Pritchett going through some of the comments of former Irish quarterback Deshaun Kizer, drafted by the Cleveland Browns. And I noticed that he picked up a Browns jersey and has number 17 on it. Brian Sipes' old number.
Yeah.
I don't know if 14 is taken or not. I have not looked that in-depthly into the Browns roster, but 17 was picked up, and I thought of old Brian Sipe, who could throw that pill around back in the early 80s when the Browns were a little different football team back then.
They wish they had Brian Sipe or Bernie Kosar or one of those guys. Not, again, nothing against Deshaun, but that's those Cleveland Browns compared to right now. I mean, that's a lot different. When you want to talk about culture, I mean, they were the team that couldn't quite get there, but as conservative as Marty Schottenheimer was, as safe as Marty Schottenheimer played it, I mean, that was when Marty that back in the 80s, you know. As you know, I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm wearing my Cowboys shirt right now. My dad, Washington Redskins fan. But the team that we kind of had in common back in the 80s,
damn, Timmy Smith,
was the Cleveland Browns and the Cardiac Kids. And we would actually, because he was a big Jim Brown fan, my dad was, from way back in the day. So we kind of pulled for those guys together. And when Marty went over to Kansas City, that was kind of the one little era, even, you know, even before Joe Montana came over and all that stuff, because I, you know, the whole Cowboys 49. But in any case, when Marty came over there, even as conservative as he was, that was the time, because of that Cleveland Browns pull that I had in me.
I'm not sure if I should be happy Marty was so conservative, because it helped Denver beat him 3 times in 4 years in the AFC title game. But then again, man, once they beat Cleveland, they got their brains kicked out of those Super Bowls. It just kept getting worse and worse. But I'll say this, because there's a lot of Lions fans and Browns fans would do anything just to see their team get to the Super Bowl,
yep,
even if they lost 60-0. And Denver started 0-4. It was not a lot of fun, but there's still nothing like your team in the Super Bowl, win or lose. I know it stinks when you lose, and you can ask Falcons fans that, but the day leading up to the game is just something very, very special.
And that's what just ate at Marty so much, the fact that he came so close and had so many teams that were so good, from those Mack and Biner Cleveland Browns and some of those Kansas City Chief teams, and even with the Chargers when they were 13-3. So close. They got so close so many times, and he could never quite get there.
Those darn three amigos, Vance Johnson, Mark
right.
Jackson, and Ricky Natil.
That's right.
There's some names from a few years ago. All right, back to Kaiser Audio. His thoughts on being pick number 52 in the draft, when at one point he was considered arguably the best quarterback in the draft and a possible first-round pick.
You know, that I'm in the right place for a reason, and that, you know, God always has a plan, and that his plan is in action now. After spending as much time as I was able to spend with, you know, Sashi and the coaches here, there's an obvious correlation and relationship that we were able to create that was good for me. And, you know, when I saw that opportunity to go coming up at that 52nd pick, I was more than excited to know that there was going to be a chance that I was going to be able to be a Cleveland Brown. So when that call came through, it kind of all came to fruition.
Okay, so he's pick number 52. And here's the thing. As we sit here right now, it doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Nothing else matters. All the things written, all the things talked about Deshaun Kaiser, the fact that he was pick 52 means absolutely nothing. He now has a clean slate. And his job is to impress the Cleveland Browns, because they're not going to worry about all these other things. They now have him in their building. And eventually, every single day, I know the rules have changed. You don't get to spend as much time with rookies as you used to at the collective bargaining agreements. Everything has changed. Everything's to the point now where the players are hardly on the practice field anymore.
Yeah.
But the fact is, they have a chance to groom him the way they want, and they have a chance to get to know Deshaun Kaiser on a day-in and day-out basis, and they don't have to rely on rumor to try to figure out who he is. So now, everything's gone. The articles are gone. Pick 52 is gone. He can just be number 17, Deshaun Kaiser, member of the Cleveland Browns, and try to make himself a big part of the football team.
Yeah, absolutely. Minicamp is going to be, rookie minicamp's going to be coming up, and that'll be their first real chance to really get their hands on him full time and really sort of see what he can do. And if Hugh Jackman or Jackson is really this quarterback whisperer, he'll find out what he's going to get. If he can sort of put his hands on Deshaun Kaiser and make these tweaks, how much improvement can he do in a relatively short amount of time?
Now Kaiser talking about his new head coach, Hugh Jackman, as you mentioned, the quarterback whisperer.
Yeah.
So what type of conversations has Deshaun had with his new head coach since he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns?
About how much work that needs to go into this next couple months. I think there's a clear message that that playbook's pretty big. And you know, I'm going to have to dive into it if I'm going to have any opportunity to try to compete early. And to just take it day by day, to truly relax and you know, exhale after this long pre-draft process to make sure that the next couple, you know, months go the way they need to.
Well, they're not shutting the door on anything with Kizer at this particular moment. And you got two veteran guys. Maybe I shouldn't call Kessler a veteran. He's not been in the league that long, just a year. But Osweiler has been around, so I would be shocked if he's on the field quickly, maybe late in the year. All depends on how he looks in practice, but I still, if they keep Osweiler, I just can't believe he's not the starting quarterback.
Do you think it's a good idea for them, though, to keep Osweiler or maybe go out? Would Jay Cutler, for example, would that do Deshaun Kizer any better? Even though I know Jay Cutler sort of brings his own thing, or even Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think he's available out there. I think Fitzpatrick would be good. I don't know if he would want to, but Jay Cutler is desperate. Apparently, he really wanted to go to Houston, and they wanted nothing to do with him. But would a guy who's been around, would he be discernibly better for Deshaun Kizer and your football team than a guy like Osweiler, who the Texans obviously wanted no part of and did everything they could to get rid of him?
He's got to be a veteran that's willing to help
right.
The younger guys.
And I don't know, would Cutler be that guy? If he's sitting there and he's on the outside looking in right now, would Cutler be that guy?
I don't want to be another media member that just takes shots at him because of the perception we have of him.
Mm-hmm.
But the perception is that he would not come across as that type of person.
Right.
Maybe we'd be fooled if we were around him in the quarterback room. So I don't know how to answer your question, but I'll just say in general, if you're going to bring in another veteran, he's got to be a guy that would be willing to help, because even Osweiler at this point, I don't think he's in position to be a huge help because he's still trying to figure things out for himself.
He's 26 years old. Yeah, he had the great flash with the Broncos. Horrible last year with the Texans. To me, if you could get if a guy like Fitzpatrick, again, I don't know if a guy like Fitzpatrick would want to, because of where he is in his career, I would think that he would want to try to attach himself to a team that could try to win right now. But I don't know, because of where he is, if teams would want that. He sort of overplayed his hand with the Jets last offseason.
You mean holding out for all this money because I'm this good and then laid an egg?
but that's exactly why he held out for that money, because I think he knew that he was sort of playing with borrowed time as far as his career. But he's kind of had that, gives me the impression that if you could get him on the team, he would be that kind of guy who would put his arm around a young guy and sort of show him the ropes and help him out.
Which is a better situation for Kizer, Browns or if he'd went to the Jets?
Oh, man.
I think Browns.
Right now, it might be. Again, it's still so early with what they're trying to do there with the new management and just the whole thing. It's so early. All we have, we're tainted by what we know about the Browns. Again, what stretches back for almost two decades now. So you might be right, because between the Jets and the Bills, I think those are the two teams that are probably below the Cleveland Browns right now on that pecking order, that as far as teams that you'd want to avoid.
Final soundbite from Deshaun Kizer. I think he's in a fun division from one standpoint, and I mentioned this last hour. He's the type of quarterback I think will hold up well in the snow and the rain and the mud of the AFC North. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland, that's just all yucky, messy, goopy stuff that you play in. To me, I think that's okay for him.
Yeah.
So here is Kizer talking about playing in the AFC North.
Absolutely. I think that this is a division in an area in the country where you have to be tough. You have to be big. You have to have big hands. You have to be able to play in different, you know, weather conditions. And that's something I've been doing my whole life. Football to me is meant to be played in the cold. It's meant to be played in the mud. You know, if you go back to the Pee Wee days, the best practices are the ones where it's super muddy and you're sliding around. And that's what I've always known football to be. So I look forward to, you know, taking the toughness and grit that I was able to create through experiences in middle school, high school, and then at the college level and apply them to playing here in Cleveland.
Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Ben Roethlisberger, and someone for the Cleveland Browns will be the four starters in the AFC North. Take your pick. They might go through a couple.
You're probably right about that. I think they do have at least two starters this year.
It'd be nice if their defense got a lot better to help take some pressure off the quarterback. Well, and they're trying with what they did in the draft.
They went and got what they think is a difference maker.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett, 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Coming up next, rapid fire. Can you tease anything?
A little more DeShone Kizer at the start of rapid fire, and the Bears as well. I'll just stay with that.
Okay, fair enough. And also, we'll get to the IHSAA football and basketball sectional realignments. Some analysis on that coming up. We'll get to baseball. A lot to get to. I don't know how we're going to get it in over the next 29 minutes, but we'll try on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. Twenty-four minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser and Legacy Heating and Air. Along with Sean Steyers, I'm Darren Pritchett. Hope you had a great weekend. Thanks for sticking around. Sports Beat on WSBT Radio for this first day of May. Already a month into the baseball season, believe it or not. We'll get to IHSAA sectional realignment coming up. But right now, it's time once again for Rapid Fire, a little game we play. Sean comes up with statements or questions or true or false or whatever.
Whichever they happen to be.
Whatever it happens to be. And then he relays them to me. I've decided not to look at them. I just like to go cold turkey and see what we come up with. So,
all right.
If you're ready, I'm ready.
Let's start with this one then on the topic of DeShone Kizer. Actually, I have a couple Kizer questions for you. First, considering where he ended up going in the draft, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate Kizer's decision to come out?
Ooh, you went with a different direction there at the end. Yeah. I thought I knew where you were going, and
okay.
I'm ready to answer it in a different way.
Okay.
I still think the decision was an 8.
Okay.
And it's from this standpoint. I don't care about 52 overall. It's about getting in the league and getting the job done. I just think when you factor in Brandon Wimbush was looming on this football team at Notre Dame, at some point he was going to get in there. If DeShone Kizer was benched last year for Malik Zaire,
right,
then to me, Brandon Wimbush has more upside by a long shot than Zaire. So if things started to go downhill for Kizer or the offense in general, at some point, in my opinion, you would think there would be a chance Wimbush might be called upon this year. And if that happens, what happens to his draft status? Plus, an outstanding draft class for quarterbacks coming in 2018. That's probably as important as anything I just said.
And that's still, we have hindsight now to look back at. So it's easy to say, oh, it was a bad decision. You went two-thirds of the way through the second round. But based on the information that he had back in late November and early December, when everyone was still telling him how great he was, and he gets the grade from the NFL, and they're telling him. So I'm with you. I'm right up there, 7.5, 8 as well. That's not the information he had when he had to make the decision. All the information at that point when he had to make the decision said, you've got a first round grade, you should come out.
In a perfect world, he goes back to Notre Dame. But it's a business decision, and when you look at everything, yeah, I think he made the right choice. Yeah, he should come back. He should gain more experience. He should work on his fundamentals. I agree with that 100%, but from a business standpoint, I think he had to do it.
Yep, absolutely. All right, over under 4.5 starts for Kizer this season.
Under.
Really?
Just can't put him on the field that quick.
No, well, I don't think he's going to be on the field that quick, but based on the way the roster looks right now, and I know you said you think that Osweiler is going to end up staying with the Browns, and it doesn't sound like they really still want to keep him around. There was talk that they were trying to trade for Kirk Cousins over the weekend still.
Garoppolo was always in the back of their mind.
Garoppolo was out there and all that. So I think, especially if it's Kessler, even if it is Osweiler, I go over just because I think that by the second half of the season, he'll be on the field one way or another.
All right.
Because it's not like they're going to compete. And if they do compete, then more power to them. And I'm talking about in the NFC North. But I think it's going to be over because one way or another, they're going to be in a situation where they're going to have to find out what they've got.
If Osweiler starts, I wonder how patient the Browns fans will be, considering the season they just came off of, a one-win season, and you don't have high expectations this year. I think the true football fans realize how bad Brock was last year, so I'm assuming the fan base will not be overly patient with Osweiler if he is, in fact, the starter in Cleveland.
Right. All right, fair or foul, the Chicago Bears inviting recently signed quarterback Mike Glennon to their draft party only to trade up, obviously, and get Mitchell Trubisky with the second pick.
I had not heard this.
I just saw this today. They invite him to the draft party, and what happens 20 minutes into the draft? Oh, by the way, we just found your replacement, your successor.
Well, we do know that they have been hot on the Trubisky trail for some time, even though there were not a lot of breadcrumbs. They didn't work him out, those type of things. But if they knew,
obviously, yeah.
I don't know.
Amazing. It just another level of this, what are the Bears thinking thing? Yeah, right. It's just amazing that they would do that to the guy.
Well, I've got to say foul on that one, 100%. I guess it's not Ryan Pace's job to find out about those things or worry about it. His job was to draft the best player possible. And if they kept it close to the vest, the people that invited Glennon maybe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know where the invitation was extended from or anything.
I'm trying to be cautious and not jumping all over the Bears, but boy, that's a bad look.
See, the only thing that out of this whole thing, the only thing I can say in the Bears' favor is they did bring in Glennon. They obviously know that they wanted a stopgap, and so they do have a veteran in place, and they're not going to throw Trubisky right out there.
The good news is I just saw Glennon's contract today. Hardly anything next year.
There
it's like
you
three
go.
Or $4 million. Right. So maybe that was a sign, and we didn't even realize it.
Right. Okay, fill in the blank on this one. The Buffalo Bills firing their general manager and scouting department the day after the draft is blank.
Nuts. You could have done it at the end of the season.
Right.
I don't know if there's ever a great time because scouting goes 365 days pretty much. But after the season is over or toward the end of the season, you've got to make that decision. It's interesting that I think it's the Pegulas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right.
They fired the Sabres head coach and GM 10 days ago.
Really?
So they're dealing with both organizations at the same time. And they're in a spot now where they are searching for both organizations' new leadership. They made the point that we want the opportunity to hire our first Bills general manager. So they want their person.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've went through the process of the draft. The only thing I will say, since they have their head coach in place, that there are things that he wants, and hopefully the scouting department brought in players that will fit what he wants to do, so maybe that will work out okay. But yeah, to do it right after the draft is very, very odd.
Well, and to let them, because they fired Rex Ryan at the end of the season, and so they kind of did it backwards. At least the Colts, they kept the coach, but they got rid of the general manager and then let the new general manager do the drafting. But to let these guys go through the draft, make your draft picks that are going to set up next year, and then get rid of him, to me, that just seems ridiculous. And it's, I mean, is it to, so my fill in the blank was I said it's a sign that the Bills have become the new Browns. And is it any wonder that the Bills actually have a longer playoff drought at 17 years than the 14 years the Browns have been out?
And in a strange way, it all comes back to Tom Brady. Because nobody can beat him.
That's true.
In that division, no one can touch him.
Yep. All right, toss up. Which was the better NFL draft guest picker over the weekend? Rocky the orangutan for the Colts or Drew Pearson for the Cowboys?
The Cowboy receiver just grilled the Eagles fans.
He lit
it
up.
Fantastic. It was epic. How many times did he say, was it five-time world champion Dallas
right.
Cowboys?
Everything you could think of.
That was really, really cool. And he just kept sticking that knife in a little deeper
That's
to
right.
Eagles fans who are still awaiting that first championship. in the Super Bowl era.
Yeah. Well, you know, and what I will say, and it was just, I was sitting there watching it live as it happened, and it was just everything you said. And I will give Eagles fans all the passion and energy, and everyone's talked about it, just what a great draft it was and all that stuff as far as the fans go. But, I mean, it's like if you're a Bronco fan and you've got Rick Upchurch up there and you're doing the draft in Oakland, it'd be the exact same thing. Just lit him on fire. And the whole orangutan thing, and I agree with Mike Mayock. Maybe he was being a little overly cranky, but Mayock was saying when they kept cutting to the Colts and the orangutan, it's like, if you get drafted three Colts players now, their draft day is going to go back to the orangutan on the touch screen at the Indianapolis Zoo. I agree with Mayock. I just think it was a little bit much.
Rule of thumb, keep it simple.
Yeah.
Yep. Keep it simple. There's enough cool things in Indy.
Right.
That you could have used. Houston used an astronaut. That's very, very cool. I like that. But there's got to be something else you can do in Indianapolis.
Well, and just
Larry Bird's available.
Just think, because even not, and taking Pearson and some of these other guys, like when they started doing this kind of stuff a few years back, because, you know, when they put together the Tom Brady thing, for example, they cut back and you've got the commissioner making the pick. So even when they started doing some of these other guest pickers, that's what they cut back to when they're doing the documentary 15 years from now. Are they going to cut back to the orangutan doing the touch screen at the zoo when they talk about these guys? And that's kind of what bugs me about
I have an idea for the Colts next time if they need a guest picker. I'm not going to say it out loud. I'm just going to hold this up. Don't read it, okay? Oh, okay. What do you think of this idea? Okay, that works then. I'm not going to go with it on the air. I'm a little too nervous about
that? Can I tweet that later?
No.
Oh, man.
It would be epic, but I can't say it. I don't want to be mean.
Even Ursay's daughter was also the one there that actually doing the reading of the thing, and it's like, could you have a more annoying voice and an orangutan doing these picks at the same time? Okay, buy or sell.
As long as the Colts keep bringing Broncos quarterbacks to win Super Bowls, they can do whatever they want. They've been great for us, so can't wait for Andrew Luck to go to Denver.
Buy or sell, the NHL doing its draft lottery on the same day the NFL draft is going on.
So poorly run.
That's,
you want it in a day to itself.
Exactly. Don't you want some publicity? It just completely got swallowed up in the whole thing.
I love my sport. I love my league, but they just kick themselves in the shin all the time.
They could be doing it right now, for example, or at 7 o'clock or at 8 o'clock tonight when nothing else is going on, but you do it in the middle of the NFL draft. The NFL owns this country.
I think maybe some of it has to do with it's such a Canadian sport, even though they don't have as many teams as the United States.
They're just not even as cognizant about it.
But I know they cover the NFL up in Canada, but maybe that has something to do with it.
I don't know. Hey, let's get a couple baseball questions in before we wrap
things
up. White Sox.
I got hockey. I'm shocked already.
Hey, right? But even though we talked about.
It's negative.
We dogged them, yeah. The White Sox won a surprising 13 games in April. So over under 14.5 wins for the Sox in May. Now, keep in mind, they only played 23 games in April, and they won 13. They're going to play 29 games in the month of May. So that's why it's bumped up a little bit, 14.5.
That's a good question. I just can't believe the starting rotation holds up. Miguel Gonzalez finally came back to earth yesterday. 6 innings, 14 hits, 7 runs. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I'm going to have to take the under on that.
I'm going under as well. They're going to get to pad out their wins a little bit because they play the Royals to start off the month. They're starting with a series in Kansas City, but they're going to have the Angels, the Orioles, the Red Sox. They'll play a little bit tougher competition. They'll get outside the Central a little bit more. So I don't think they'll be able to quite keep up that pace in the month of May. All right, last one. Yankees rookie Aaron Judge smacked 10 home runs in the first month of the season. So, over under 12 home runs for Judge over the next 2 months.
I wished I knew how many games he played at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I know, right?
Down the left and right field lines, you can get a few out of there. I believe in everything balancing out. I mean, that means he would have 22 home runs going into July.
Right.
Under your scenario.
Right. Which would mean by the end of the season, he's over, well over 40 home runs.
I got to say no to that. I got to say that's going to be too high of a number. I mean, that would be incredible. I think you have to say this. When you go through your first full season of the majors, at some point the pitchers normally figure you out,
yep,
and you have to make an adjustment, and I would have to think that that's going to be coming sometime soon, although...
Well, because now the advanced scouts who have been out watching his games, they have a scouting report on him, plus the video and everything else that comes with it. Remember Trevor Story last year for the Rockies? Great, pun intended, story early on. But Trevor Story for the Rockies, he hit 10 home runs in the first month, and then he hit just 9 over the next 2 months because of what you're talking about there. The scouting reports come back around. Now, he got hurt by the end of July, mm-hmm, but still, he was healthy over the next 2 months. And I'm going under as well. I don't think he can keep up that pace. It's a great early story, but I don't think he'll be able to keep it up, Aaron Judge.
Okay.
That's it.
That is it. Very good. You've brought a little spunk to that segment. I enjoy this. I look forward to it every day.
Got a little bit of everything today. We had mostly draft last week, but we got a little bit of everything.
It might
today.
Be 2 months before the next hockey question, but I totally understand.
I'll try. I'll work to get one in there for
every
you.
Once in a while. We will recap the brand new sectionals that have been released by the IHSAA, Mishawaka football, South Bend, Washington basketball, St. Joe girls basketball, probably the teams affected the most, at least those are the teams that stand out. We'll get to that next on WSBT. 4 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. The IHSAA announced sectional realignments today. Let's just quickly go through some of the details. We'll start with football. No change really for Penn in sectional two. They're still there. Chesterton, Valpo, Warsaw will be in their sectional. 5A, the big news is Mishawaka is no longer there. They're in 4A, so 5A, Sectional 9, LaPorte, Michigan City, Munster, and South Bend Adams.
These four-team sectionals, it's just in 5A and 6A, and it's four teams. Then you get to 4A, which we'll talk about here, and it's like eight teams.
Yeah. 5A Sectional 10, Concord, Central, Memorial, Fort Wayne, Northside, and Goshen. Football 4A. Mishawaka moves down to Sectional 18. The other seven teams in that sectional, Hobart, Kankakee Valley, New Prairie, Clay, Riley, St. Joe, Washington.
Yeah, I wonder where we'll be come end of next October.
I think you're going to be in Sectional 18 quite a bit.
Probably.
Class 3A, Sectional 27. You've got Marion still there with Fairfield, Glenn, Jimtown, Knox, Maconaqua, Peru, and Tippy Valley. Now to boys basketball. Penn is back with all the NIC teams. Class 4A Sectional 3 boys basketball sectional. It is LaPorte, Mishawaka, Penn, Adams, Clay, Riley. So Washington and Plymouth move on to other sectionals. And yep, you get Penn back with NIC teams, which I think is kind of the way it should be, honestly. I like that.
Yeah, it's definitely different when you have Penn out over with all the Elkhart schools and you got all South Bend, Mishawaka over here. I think it'll be good.
Then Sectional 4 for boys basketball, Concord, Central, Memorial, Goshen, Northridge, Plymouth, and Warsaw. That just seems to make a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yep.
3A, you've got Culver Academies, Glenn, Jimtown, Marion, New Prairie, St. Joe, and Washington has their new home in Sectional 19.
Yeah.
And then the one thing for girls basketball that stood out, St. Joe has accumulated enough of those points winning a state title. They get bumped up from 3A to 4A. So now 4A, Sectional 3 for girls basketball, LaPorte, Mishawaka, Penn, Adams, Clay, oof, Riley, and St. Joe. So you could have St. Joe and Penn.
Good luck.
Well, you know how we feel about
it. Have them in the first round right away.
There you go. You read my mind. I was going to say, boy, that'd be a great championship game. Well, it could be the first game, too, as we found out earlier this year.
That's right.
Somehow, some way. But that, for the other teams in that sectional, that is a tough, tough draw with those two teams, state title contenders, in the same sectional. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Sports Beat the rest of the week will be live at Four Winds Field. South Bend Cubs' six-game homestand begins tomorrow night against the Kane County Cougars. The Diamondbacks are back in town.
Ho-ho!
After all the years, they were back 2 years ago.
Yep.
And now back in South Bend, where they used to call home for so many years. And Chicago Cubs personnel will be here to give out World Series rings tomorrow night.
Oh, cool.
To the staff. So all looking right. forward to that. For Sean, I'm Darren. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.